time to get up with Cam Newton. We will have Randy Moss live to tell you the one thing this quarterback must do if he's going to win big in New England. Plus, a tale of three Green Bay quarterbacks. You'll hear why Brett Favre thinks the rookie should be on the field this season. Should that really happen? And Jalen Rose has changed his pick for the NBA title based on something that happened in the last week. You'll hear why and who he now thinks is the team to win it all as we get up with you, starting right now. From Bristol, Mike Greenberg here, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. We welcome all of you who've been watching Korean baseball. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours or thereabouts, and then First Take will come your way in its entirety. And we are talking this morning about Cam Newton, whom we are still waiting to sign officially his one-year deal that is incentive-laden with the Patriots. Norv Turner was Newton's last offensive coordinator in Carolina. He had interesting comments to Sports Illustrated looking back on the way Cam was playing before he got hurt a year and a half ago. He said, "My whole deal is when Cam was healthy and we were there with him in 2018, we were 6-2. Just look at the tape. He played his butt off. His issue was more health than anything else. And from what I understand, I don't think these are health issues that he can't overcome. He's had the time off now. I think he'll be great." And let me put some numbers where those thoughts are. In 2018, which was the first year that Cam and Norv were together, the numbers were spectacular. Through 8 games, he was basically in every way ahead of the pace he had set in 2015, the year that his team was 15-1, and he won the MVP. Then he hurt his shoulder, and he's really never been the same again since. So there is a lot to get to here, and we have a lot of acumen ready to go. Look who's here, Orlovsky and Booger with us this morning, and Dan Graziano, our insider extraordinaire. And Danny Graz, I'll start with you. What can you tell us about the Patriots' decision and what went into the thinking to add Cam Newton?
Really just too good a deal to pass up, Greeny. And we've talked about this over the past few months with regard to Bill Belichick and the Patriots always seeking out value in the marketplace. And this is a player with, you know, all-time great ability, unique all-time great ability, who's willing to sign with them for what appears to be, you know, the minimum or close to the minimum, a low risk, almost no risk, and potentially very high reward deal. So obviously the Patriots have Jarrett Stidham, who they're high on, but it was a late round pick last year. Brian Hoyer, who's a backup. So they take a shot on being able to upgrade their quarterback position significantly if Cam Newton is healthy and plays like the Cam Newton we all know. Or if he doesn't, if he's not healthy and he can't, they really aren't out any significant amount of money.
That's very low risk, potentially very high reward, typical Belichick, and Vegas loves it, by the way. Let me just put those numbers up quickly here. Vegas is expecting New England to be much better here. Their odds to win the title or at least play in the title game have fallen sharply. The biggest change from yesterday was the new release of the division odds. They had originally been picked to finish second behind Buffalo. Now New England is the co-favorite to win what would be their 12th consecutive AFC East title. So here come the guys. Orlovsky and Booger are here. Dan, very simply, what impact does adding Cam have, in your view, on their outlook for this coming season?
Well, they go from a team that wasn't in the playoffs to a team that should be in the playoffs. This was a team that had big issues outside of the quarterback position. They were 0-4 against the top four teams of the AFC last year, and an offense that big time struggled with because of the skill players. Well, now that Cam is in the picture, this should be, again, another top, certainly a top 10, top 8 defense, and now this offense should be much better. Because Cam's addition is going to minimize their greatest weakness offensively. Their greatest weakness are the skill positions on the outside. And the addition of Cam is going to kind of mask that in some capacities. And so this impacts the Pittsburghs and the Buffaloes and the Tennessees and Indies, all those teams that many of us think are going to be in that playoff picture, whether they win the division or potentially for that seventh seed, this impacts them because now New England is back in the playoff race.
Okay, but that is significantly less enthusiastic than a lot of my guys were yesterday. Yesterday, Booger, I was hearing people on this show saying Cam Newton makes New England a Super Bowl contender. Booger, what do you think?
Well, Green, I don't think he makes them a Super Bowl contender. Here's what I'll say. Cam Newton makes them a team that can contend for the playoffs. Let's not forget now, Cam Newton has had 1 year where he was absolutely outstanding, and that's 2015 when he won the MVP. To me, that's the anomaly. If you're looking for what you can expect from Cam Newton, you can expect probably a 55 to 60% passer, a guy that's still going to try to make some plays with his legs, and that's dependent upon him being healthy. Cam Newton is a quarterback that's never going to beat you from the pocket. He's going to have to use his athleticism to make plays in and out of the pocket. And I got to see if he's still healthy, Greeny. I mean, all the reports say he is. I want to see that he is healthy. And if he is, he can be a playmaker for this team. But I would pump the brakes on the Patriots being a Super Bowl contender. This makes them better, but this doesn't make the receivers better. This doesn't make the skill position group that the Patriots still have any better. It just adds another playmaker to this team.
Interesting. So we're less enthusiastic with the group this morning than we were yesterday. Orlowski, you look at offense as well as anybody that we have here. What does the Patriots offense look like with Cam Newton? We know what the rest of the team is. What does it look like with Cam Newton playing quarterback?
Yeah, Greeny, this offense is going to kind of be like a homograph. And for people like Dan Graziano that don't have great education, a homograph is when two words are spelt the same but have very different meanings. This offense is going to look very similar to what it has been in the past. Tons of shifts and motions and personnel adjustments and pre-snap movements. But after the snap, it's going to look totally different. It is going to look very similar. I expect it to look very similar to a lot of what Baltimore has done last year with Lamar Jackson. They're going to play with three tight ends a ton. There's going to be a ton of pre-snap, and quarterback run is going to be a part of this. Now, here's where it's going to go to the next level. Josh McDaniels is a great play caller, just like Lamar Jackson has down in Baltimore with Greg Roman. And what they do is constantly every single week pick out who the strong person is on the defense and kind of void him, create him, put him in the conflict. So they take a defense's best player and minimize what he can do really well. And that's what I expect New England to do with Cam Newton. That's why, and Booger's right, the skill players are still the question, but that is why this is such an impactful signing for the offense, because when you do stuff like that with your quarterback, your skill players don't need to be dominant. And that's why I do expect this to be an improved offense production-wise, because of the stuff they can do with Cam as a runner.
Go ahead, Booger.
Well, Green, notice what Dan is talking about. We bring up the Baltimore Ravens, and they already are talking about running Lamar Jackson less. And now we have a 31-year-old Cam Newton, and we want him to do what Lamar Jackson did last year running the football. I just don't see it, man. Cam is 31, and his biggest thing is to be 6'5 and 260 and to use that great Superman athleticism to make plays. I don't know if he can still do that. So they're going to have to morph Cam Newton very similar to the way Norv Turner did. Cam became a better passer, not because he became more accurate. Norv Turner stopped throwing the football down the field. It was short to intermediate passes, checking the football down to the running back. If they can do that in New England, Cam can be successful. But don't make any mistake about it. Cam is not all of a sudden about to go back to 2013 Cam and start running the football like Lamar Jackson. Like, that's not happening anymore.
Graziano, I'm trying to read the look on your face. We're going to have to leave this here for the moment. We're going to have a lot of time to talk about Cam this morning, because I will tell you this. This group, this team reminds me a little bit, and Booger, you'll remember them, of what the Patriots were when their dynasty began. They were built on defense and running the clock and all that kind of thing. And that feels like going back to like sort of early Belichick Patriots. We'll talk about it. But now I have to get to this, because with Cam Newton off the free agent market, you could argue Colin Kaepernick now is overwhelmingly the best quarterback available. Yesterday, if you were following Dan Orlovsky on Twitter, and if you're not, I recommend that you do, he suggested three teams for Cap, and here's the tweet. We'll put it up for you. He tweeted, now that Cam is signed, I believe the top three teams that should call Cap are number one, Tennessee, number two, Pittsburgh, number three, Seattle, all three contenders, none have a proven backup. So I go back to Dan Graziano. What is the latest, Dan, on the Colin Kaepernick front?
Yeah, I mean, as rare as it is to see a Dan Orlovsky tweet that's not all about Dan Orlovsky, that was an interesting one. And I think that the thing you have to understand about Kaepernick is that people, you know, teams around the league are aware that he's out there, have been for 2 or 3 years, haven't made a move to sign him. And the speculation on Kaepernick is all external. I mean, I've asked a lot of people, and I have not been able to uncover any concrete interest from any team in Kaepernick, any evidence that any team has reached out to his representation to express interest. It just feels like I think we all want him to sign. I think there are people around the league, people in the league office, there are coaches around the league who support him and would like to be able to get him on a team, and it may happen. But to this point, there has not been any significant activity that I would expect would lead to that anytime soon.
So, Dan, why Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Seattle? Why were those your teams in the tweet yesterday?
Well, they're all three bona fide playoff contenders and have championship aspirations. And then the reality is that the COVID-19 situation that we deal with is going to bring a different element into play for a backup quarterback other than just injury. And three, they all need an upgrade. I mean, if you look at Tennessee, their backup right now is Logan Woodside. He's never taken a snap in an NFL game. If you look at Pittsburgh with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph, their QBR last year was a combined 32. And then if you look at Seattle, Smith, he's played two games in the last 5 years. So everyone who wants to tell me Kaepernick hasn't played in three seasons, you don't even know if he can play anymore. I just told you three teams where their backups, one has never played in the NFL. Geno Smith has two starts in 5 seasons. That's the same as not playing in 3 years. And then Pittsburgh obviously needs a backup to their performance from last year. And so I look at it and I go, if we're just going to base it off a talent level, strictly off a talent level, I don't think anyone could sit here and tell me that Colin Kaepernick is not more foundationally talented than all three of those situations. And if one of those teams, I'm looking at it and going, I would be sick to my stomach if I was on a run this season and I'm setting myself up for a playoff spot or the one seed or winning my division and my quarterback can't play and my starter quarterback can't play and my backup is the guy that I just thought was going to be good. If there was a season to have too many backup quarterbacks, it's this season in the NFL because of the coronavirus.
I get what you're saying. But, Berger, let's just be real here, all right? No reasonable assessment of what has happened over the last 3 years suggests that the way Colin Kaepernick plays had anything to do with the reason he wasn't playing in the NFL. So I guess the question is, with all that has changed in the last 5 or 6 weeks in our country, do you believe the time is now that a team will bring in Colin Kaepernick? And if so, which team makes sense to you?
Should they, Greeny? Absolutely. Will they? I don't think so. And Dan Orlovsky makes a lot of astute points about the backup quarterback position and everything that's going on. And it would be a shame for a team to be on a playoff run and not have a capable backup quarterback. But Dan, I can go back the last 3 seasons and I can give you scenario after scenario that fits your criteria. Greeny, this comes down to the owner. Mm-hmm. Are the 31 owners plus the Green Bay Packers, is someone amongst the 32 going to sign off on bringing Colin Kaepernick into your building and everything that comes with him? And we all know it. We don't have to hash this out. All of a sudden, because of what's happened over the last several weeks in our country with Drew Brees, with Black Lives Matter, with George Floyd, all of a sudden this is being revisited because we think all of a sudden now the NFL is ready for Colin Kaepernick. Well, what happened the last 3 years? Haven't the owners been ready the last 3 years? No, they haven't. And that's the reason why he's not in this league. Dan is right. It has nothing to do with his ability. He can still play. Colin Kaepernick being in this league comes down to, are the owners going to sign off on him coming into their building? And if they do, there's a couple of opportunities. We've heard Seattle sniff around and maybe Pittsburgh and Tennessee. But if these owners don't sign off on it, Greeny, don't get it twisted. Everything that's happened the last 6 weeks in our country has changed the conversation. It's changed the movement. But the one thing it has not changed what's happened with the 31 owners and the Green Bay Packers, because we have not heard them come out and say that there is an opportunity for Colin Kaepernick in this league. Until I see that, I'll then believe he'll have a chance. But all this conversation about Kaepernick, this is something that we've created. There is no substantial evidence that says that Colin Kaepernick is now about to do something that he hasn't done the last 3 years, which is get back in the NFL. I'll believe you when I see it.
I'm with you. And Graziano, again, I'll let you have the last word here. But just for those of you who tuned in sort of in the middle of that conversation, there's suddenly it has become fashionable for NFL coaches to tiptoe around the notion of bringing in Colin Kaepernick. But Dan Graziano, our insider, you're telling me you can't find any team that you think is really on the verge of doing it.
No, at this point, no. Look, there's a lot working against him, right? I mean, obviously, even he hasn't played in 3 years. You're talking about Cam Newton and Jameis Winston, accomplished quarterbacks that have done a lot these last 3 years, signing for next to nothing. Jameis for a backup job and Cam maybe to win a starting job if he's healthy in New England. So the market isn't exactly set up for this in the first place. Dan's point is good about how there are backup situations that he could certainly improve, but that hasn't allowed him to get a sniff here these last 3 years, and I'm not sure that the situation sets up perfectly for him to get one now. It could happen, but as of this point, I don't think it's close.
If Colin Kaepernick were to recapture most of what he was at his best, he wouldn't only be the best backup quarterback in the NFL. He would be better than many teams, if not most teams, starting quarterbacks. This has never had anything to do with how well he does or doesn't play. All right, we'll take our first break. We have much more to do as we get up with you this morning. Brett Favre has a plan for the Packers' new quarterback that our analysts don't understand. You'll hear what it is and why it makes absolutely no sense as we continue. And then Tom is gone, Cam is in. What does Randy Moss think about the Patriots' big change at quarterback? We'll ask him. And we'll do a lot more as we get up with you this morning on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Expedition Everest. Join us on Top of the World tonight at 10 on National Geographic. Other story from the NFL. The Packers shocked the NFL world, as you will recall, earlier this spring when they traded up to take Aaron Rodgers' potential successor, Jordan Love, in the first round of the draft. Well, recently, Packers legend Brett Favre told TMZ he sees a way both quarterbacks could be on the field together this year.
I think there's ways to incorporate, like much like Taysom Hill with the Saints. Use him as a, you know, halfback pass, but occasionally let him run it just to show that you'll do that. You got to be careful. It could cost you your job, in other words, doing foolish stuff. But I think there is a way to do it that could please everyone.
Huh. Let's get to the bottom of that. Dan Orlovsky, I'm looking at your face and I'm trying to read it. What are you thinking?
This is why it's important to watch tape, folks. Does Brett Favre think the Packers drafted Jalen Hurts? I mean, what are we talking about doing this with Jordan Love? All right, Taysom Hill for the New Orleans Saints. Taysom Hill in college ran for 2,800 yards. He averaged 5 yards per carry. He had a season when he had 1,300 yards rushing. Jordan Love averaged 2 yards per carry in his career. He never ran for more than 175 yards in a season. I mean, Utah State, who is a team that's trying to fight and claw to win games any way possible, never ran him. So now the Green Bay Packers should, because they drafted him? Like, this makes absolutely no sense. This is so out of touch with what football is right now, and that's why it's important to watch tape. Greeny, if Taysom Hill gets hurt for the Saints, it doesn't drastically impact their future. If Jordan Love gets hurt doing something stupid for the Packers, it drastically impacts their future. I have no idea why someone would say something like this.
Well, let me be clear on what you mean by drastically impacting their future, because Love is their backup quarterback. So if he were to get hurt on some sort of option play, and then Aaron Rodgers were to either A, you know, sprain an ankle, or B, get the coronavirus, Love is the guy they're turning to. Whereas in New Orleans, Taysom Hill isn't that guy. It was Teddy Bridgewater, and now it's Jameis Winston. Just to be clear on what you don't mean the long-term future, where in theoretically Jordan Love is their quarterback.
I mean both of them, Greeny.
Well, you're saying if he were to get hurt.
Both situations.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But to me, it's more about the short-term piece of it than the long-term piece of it. The chances that he's going to get hurt and thus not be able to be their quarterback in 3 years seems a little less likely than the notion that he might get hurt and knocked out for the season. We'd have to wait and see. Graziano, is there any reason to believe that the Packers are viewing Love as someone they can get on the field in that way this year?
There is not any reason to believe that. And I think to Dan's point about the long term, Jordan Love is the Packers, not just their backup. He may be their backup. He may not. They have another backup on the roster, Tim Boyle, who was there last year, who they feel like they could go to if Rodgers got hurt. But Love is their first round pick because they think he can be a future starting quarterback in the NFL. Taysom Hill was an undrafted guy out of BYU that got to the Saints, and they're like, look at all this stuff this guy can do. Let's find ways to get him on the field. That's not the way the Packers look at Jordan Love. They look at him as a developmental quarterback prospect who someday could be their starter, and you treat that guy a lot differently. His focus in year one is going to be learning how to become an NFL quarterback, and I would sincerely doubt that it's in any part of the Packers' plan to put him on the field in some kind of Taysom Hill role that would detract from that or expose him to the potential for, yes, an injury that could trouble him in the short term as well as the long term.
Booger?
Greeny, there's a better chance of you, my friend, participating in a UFC fight than Jordan Love taking on the Taysom Hill role. Like that will never happen. And I know how afraid of contact and anything aggressive you are. So let's just look at this. If you look at Taysom Hill, his mentality, as Dan alluded to, has always been that of a runner. Like that's a mentality. Think about Tim Tebow carrying the football, running the football. Yes. Jordan Love is not that. Jordan Love wants to be a quarterback. Let's look how Taysom Hill is built. He's a thicker guy, 225, 230 pounds. He's kind of built like a running back. You look at Jordan Love, he's kind of built like a quarterback, kind of long, lanky. He's not skinny, but he has that quarterback build. And in the end, I just think Brett Favre is trying to figure out a way to make everything kumbaya in Green Bay. The relationship has been something that's been in question, just like it was when he and Aaron Rodgers were together. And I can understand how his wheels are turning, but you have to actually put it in practicality and look at it on the football field. How can it work? And there's no way that you can put Rodgers and Love on the field. Now, if you were to tell me somehow Love can go out and play receiver based on his athleticism, I would buy that more than I buy him playing a quote-unquote Taysom Hill role. And let's not forget, Taysom Hill plays special teams. He was the personal protector on the punt. He was on kickoff. He was on kickoff return. You telling me Jordan Love is about to do that? I hear you, Brett Favre. I love you, buddy, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, so we're all in agreement. This is not likely. Let me play devil's advocate for a minute here, Orlovsky, and that is the notion of having two people on the field that can both pass the ball does strike me as an interesting piece of football's future. And I understand that the second person has to be able to fill, generally speaking, has to be able to fill some other role as well. But is it completely beyond the notion that you would have another guy like, let's just use for this sake, Jordan Love, because that's the example that Brett Favre gave you, of a guy lined up behind the quarterback who could throw the football just to put that fear into the defense. Is that something that does not create another wrinkle the defense has to be worried about?
No, because that person, that secondary person, not only needs to be able to throw the ball, but they need to put the threat of running the football in a defense as well. Because what'll happen, Greeny, is if Jordan Love comes into the game and really only used to be a secondary thrower of the football, I mean, this is the NFL. People are smart. You know, defense are just going to sit there and go, there's no threat for him to be a runner. We'll adjust our defense and understand that the likelihood is there is going to be a second pass on this football play. And so that's why Jalen Hurts is such a potential threat for the Eagles, because he's a capable thrower, but an absolutely dynamic runner. Jordan Love doesn't have that. Again, he ran for 175 yards in college, that as his max. He averaged 2 yards per carry in college football in the Mountain West. So that's why, no, there is not this aspect where we need to put multiple quarterbacks on the field just because one guy can throw. Tailbacks that can throw, then we're into a conversation of some cool stuff because they are the dominant threat as a runner.
But to be clear, Booger McFarland, if the Packers are a good team this season and playing meaningful games throughout and Aaron Rodgers does not get hurt, Jordan Love will take zero snaps?
Yes, I think not only will Rodgers take all the snaps this year if he's healthy, I think Rodgers is the quarterback next year also. I understand they drafted Jordan Love, but come on, man, it's Aaron Rodgers. As Stephen A. said, he is still a bad man.
We'll see. I tend to agree with you. They put the clock on him. It's ticking, even though that was a self-inflicted clock, and we'll see what winds up happening. But I'm in agreement with all you guys. I do not think we see Love on the field this year at all. Well, let me get up and go through the rest of a busy sports day's news. Starts with baseball, where they've had four players so far opt out of the 2020 season. Rockies outfielder Ian Desmond, Diamondbacks pitcher Mike Leake, and both Joe Ross and Ryan Zimmerman of the defending champion Nationals will all not go. Baseball players are due to report to their teams by tomorrow. Elsewhere, Imani Bates, the number one recruit in the class of 2022, committed to Michigan State yesterday. He's considered the best high school player regardless of class. He's considered by many the most talented prospect in more than a decade. This didn't become a bigger deal because no one expected him to play in college at all. The Lakers are finalizing a deal with veteran free agent guard J.R. Smith to replace Avery Bradley, who has opted out of the Orlando restart. That move would reunite Smith with LeBron James. They've certainly had interesting moments in the past. Nets stars Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan have both announced they've tested positive for the coronavirus. Jordan will opt out of Orlando as a result. Woj is reporting that Dinwiddie is, quote, strongly considering sitting out as well. The Nets team that isn't going would be outstanding. Meanwhile, in a joint initiative, the NBA and Players Association plan to paint Black Lives Matter on the court in all three arenas when they resume play. Sources tell ESPN the WNBA is considering a similar move. As we continue, the Patriots aren't exactly loaded with weapons on offense, so how exactly will Cam make them better? Dan Orlovsky will show you why it's all a numbers game as we continue next. Get up on ESPN. Want to remind everyone, we're just starting what is going to be a very busy day of sports coverage and conversation here. First Take will follow us for a full 2 hours starting at 10:30 Eastern, and then you see the rest of your day. SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump, that fun 4 o'clock hour with 20-minute versions of Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. SportsCenter follows that. The PTI guys will be on the program. And you wrap up your night with Scott Van Pelt and SportsCenter. It's a full day here, as always, on ESPN. And with that, I welcome you back to Bristol. We're approaching 9 o'clock in the morning in the East, about a minute away. This is Get Up on ESPN. I am Mike Greenberg, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. We'll be with you for the next 90 minutes here talking about all the happenings in the world of football and all the teams trying to get back and basketball, baseball, and all the rest of it. So it's a very busy time in the world of sports, and First Take will follow us in its entirety at 10:30 Eastern Time. It begins with this. The Patriots coming to terms with Cam Newton on Sunday. It's a one-year deal. It is incentive-laden. Here's their defensive back, Devin McCourty, on what he sees Cam's role being in New England.
I think for every player, I always remember Bill saying this every year, your role will be decided by you. And I don't think he'll have a role coming in other than to just be himself. Obviously, he's a guy, he's won MVP, he's been there Super Bowl. So with that, he'll come with life experience, NFL experience, that I think everyone, not just in the quarterback room, but everybody on the team can benefit from. And I think that comes with him just with who he is.
Okay, well, here's Mike Reese, who is our Patriot supporter, and let's talk about this as we hear Devin talking about how he views it. What are you hearing on how Cam will fit into that Patriots locker room?
Well, Greeny, I would say veteran leaders are excited to welcome him, and really how he's going to fit in is really up to him. What I've learned covering this team is every player gets a blank slate. And when we ask this question about Corey Dillon, Randy Moss, Chad Ochocinco, Darrell Revis, really, they come into the locker room and they get sort of the open arms treatment. It's an all business environment. And Cam Newton put something out on his YouTube channel last night that shows he might already understand that. He had a message. He said, let's get to work. And one other thing was brought up to me by someone in the organization. They said in the best case scenario, he can become that alpha presence that they miss when they lose Rob Gronkowski 2 years ago or they lose Tom Brady this year. They sort of don't have that alpha guy, and they think in the best case scenario, Cam could be that alpha presence that people can follow on game day.
Yeah, he certainly was the leader there in Carolina. We remember the way all the teams seemed to follow around his personality that year. They were so good. They were sort of a fun-loving group and all of that. So that's the off-the-field part, if you will. On the field, Cam is obviously a completely different quarterback than Tom Brady. Stylistically, how do you see the Patriots working their offense around him?
Well, one thing they won't do, Greeny, is tear their offense down and build it back up. They're going to keep the foundation, and that foundation, just to pick a number, is going to be about 75%. That's going to stay the same. But what they do is they adapt their offense to the strengths of their personnel. So take that other 25% and use this as an example. Go back to 2016 when they had to turn to Jacoby Brissett in the third game of that season. He's a player with more movement skills than Tom Brady, and I would say Cam Newton has movement skills similar to that. So they introduce some new concepts to the offense to suit Jacoby Brissett. He's running for a touchdown. And those type of things are how the offense might look a little bit different. The foundation won't change, but they'll introduce some different concepts like we saw with Jacoby Brissett.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Just sort of 25, so just a little bit on the margins, if you will. That might be less than I think most people would expect. Mike, thank you, my friend. We'll see you again soon. Let me get Orlovsky back in here. So I want to talk about this a little more, and Booger with us as well here. But I know, Dan, that you've put together a little bit of a tape, because you know, the RPO, the run-pass option, is something that we talk about so much in the NFL right now. And I think most of us are anticipating that that's part of what New England's offense will look like. So as we put the tape together, what are you seeing here, and what have you seen from Cam?
Well, Greeny, a big conversation around the Patriots is they still lack weapons at the skill position. And so when you're a defense that knows you don't fear those skill position players, what you do is you put a safety in the middle field, you leave your corners on the outside, and that's going to allow you to have an extra person down near the football for the run game. And that's why it becomes such a difficult thing. And New England is a team that still struggles with their skill position players. But adding Cam Newton's a big deal. So Dallas knows that. They want that extra guy down near the football, eight defenders. But Patriots are notorious for bringing guys in motion. So Carolina would do the same thing. Bring a seventh guy down in the box. You're trying to make it an even game. They've got eight as a defense. You now have seven as an offense in a run game. And you can run your traditional run plays, lead blockers and pullers. But what you do is you find a guy on your defense, the eighth defender, and you make him null and void. You single him out. You put him in conflict. Now you're 7-on-7, and you just give him a simple read for the quarterback. Follow the tailback. Now you have a willing and able ball carrier at the quarterback position. This is that look at New England and go, we don't really fear those receivers. Well, that's fine. You could put that extra guy down near the football. But when the addition of Cam Newton comes in New England, now Josh McDaniels can go, that's okay, guys. They have eight and we only have seven. I'll make that eighth guy our conflict guy. So when they play teams like Kansas City, it'll be Chris Jones. And when they play teams like the Rams, it'll be an Aaron Donald. That's why the addition of Cam Newton is going to help the skill position players, because it's going to impact their run game so much.
Booger, this isn't something they were doing in the NFL nearly as much when you were playing, but you were a defensive lineman. What is that like when you have to, when you're staring at that mesh point and you have to make that decision?
Well, Greeny, it's basically a play. The RPO is a play designed to give the offense answers. And the offense can't be wrong, because if you play one play, I'm going to run the other. If you play the other, I'm going to run the initial play. And it is tough to defend, but that's all predicated on the threat of the quarterback run. As you heard Mike Reese say, the Patriots are going to keep 75% of their regular offense. So this could be 25, 30% of their offense. And if you're going to major in the RPO, if you're going to go in the Kansas City, in the Baltimore type world, then your quarterback has to be a threat running the football for me as a defender to pay attention to it. Otherwise, you know what I'm going to do? When you put the football at the mesh point, I'm going to take the running back. I'm going to make the quarterback carry the football. So I think that's why when we talk about Cam's health, it's going to be imperative for him not only to be healthy, he's got to show the rest of the NFL that he's healthy and wants to run. Because it's one thing to be healthy. It's another thing to put your body in harm's way play after play. Now, if Cam will show that early in the season, now that makes it a lot tougher for a defender, because now at the mesh point, I don't know who's going to keep the football. I don't know if he's giving it to the running back or the quarterback is going to keep it. So his health is paramount on what type of offensive system that Josh McDaniels implements so they can be successful.
Yeah, and you're seeing there on your screen how many times Cam Newton has been hit since he came into the league in 2011, how many more than anybody else. And a lot of the time, I think we've complained, Dan, about the way he is officiated. And frequently, and I know we've had these conversations on Get Up and on my old show, on Mike and Mike, we would talk about it as well, that Cam, perhaps because he was so big and strong, was not protected by the officials sometimes the way we see other quarterbacks protected.
Yeah, I mean, that was the style of Cam's play. I mean, you've heard me use this phrase, Cam chose to choke on greatness rather than nibble on mediocrity. And so I certainly think that as Cam has been away football for a year because of an injury, he would have a little bit of a different mindset. We heard Mike Reese talk about the offense is not going to be totally different. That play we drew up, everybody in the NFL has that play. Not everybody in the NFL has the ability to have the quarterback read that person and then go get 15 yards. And to Booger's point, he's got to show the willingness to run. In 2018, right, two years ago, when he has having one of his better passing seasons, He was also carrying the ball about 10 times a game. So that willingness is still going to be there. It all is going to come down to math. Josh McDaniels is always going to be ahead in the game because having a quarterback that's a runner.
So we have Tom Brady, the former Patriot, in Tampa. We have Cam Newton now in New England replacing Brady. Let's do either or with those two guys. Orlovsky, who wins more games this year, Brady with the Bucs or Cam with the Pats?
I say Brady with the Bucs, Greeny. I still think that New England was more than just a quarterback away. They lost four starters on that defense, two who are really good in Jamie Collins and Kyle Van Noy. They've got the hardest schedule in football, some brutal road games. Tampa Bay won seven games last year with 35 turnovers. I mean, simple understanding of football is that that's cut in half. That's an 11-win team. I say the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady.
Booger, who gets the Super Bowl first, Brady or Cam?
Oh, I think it's Brady. You know, the Super Bowl is all about a team and talent. And if you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they obviously have more talent than the New England Patriots. The Patriots' defense is better. But let's face it, nobody cares about defense in this league anymore. It's an offensive league. And with the weapons that the Bucs have on their side of the football with Evans and Godwin and Brady and Gronkowski and now Tom Brady running point, you got to give the edge to the Buccaneers as far as that. There are still questions about the Patriots and their weapons, and they are hoping that Cam Newton can mask some of those questions.
Which brings us then to our big question here. And Dan Graziano, I'll bring you back into the conversation to start that. Which do you think was the better offseason acquisition? If you're looking at the one that will be the most impactful, and obviously these are the two biggest moves of the offseason to this point, Brady or Cam?
Well, the better acquisition is Cam because you have to factor in cost. I mean, the Buccaneers are guaranteeing Tom Brady $50 million over the next 2 years. You know, if something happens and, you know, no quarterback has ever had success at his age, you know, then they're in big trouble and it's going to hurt them long term. The Patriots are guaranteed. We haven't seen the final Cam Newton contract, but it looks like they're guaranteeing him very little. The minimum salary, if that's what it is $1.05 million this year. That's less than the fine they have to pay for filming the Bengals sidelines. So think about that. Cam Newton might cost them nothing, and the potential reward on the signing is massive. So you have to factor in the cost. I think Cam is obviously the better signing.
That's fair, but Booger is shaking his head. Why, Boog?
Because I'm down here in Tampa, and I can tell you two words they're using every day that in Tampa that they are not using in Boston. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl. They are talking about the Super Bowl in Tampa because of one guy, and that one guy is Tom Brady. So we can start talking Dan Graziano about the math and the cap and the fine and the $1 million. I guarantee you, if you walk around Boston and New England right now, they are not talking Super Bowl. And so when you talk about the better acquisition, I'm going to go with the guy that gives the team the buzz, the carte blanche, the Super Bowl favorite type deal. Look at the Buccaneers, man. It is hot country. They got helicopters flying over high schools, Graziano. Nobody even knows if the Patriots are even working out right now, buddy.
I think that's the way Belichick likes it.
That's
Booger,
how the Patriots roll.
I hear what you're saying. But so, Dan, jump in the middle of that here. I see both of you make good points. Look, with Cam Newton, there's basically no risk involved in this for New England. So that makes it great. Booger is telling us what I think, which is that Brady makes the Buccaneers a Super Bowl team. At the end of the day, that's the most important thing. Dan, at the end of the day, which one of these will we look back on and say was the better acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, it's Tom Brady. I mean, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers got the greatest football player of all time. That alone speaks volumes. And Booger makes the point. I am not somebody who looks at the Patriots as a bona fide Super Bowl contender as of today, although Dom Foxworth does. I absolutely do with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so just the expectations that have been risen in Tampa Bay, I think carry so much weight when it comes to who is the better acquisition. Listen, if Cam Newton stays healthy this year and then is the quarterback for the next 5 years of New England and keeps them in relevancy, well, then we could have a conversation. But for right now, Tom Brady's made the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a bona fide Super Bowl contender, and the expectation is they will be in that Final Four mix. I don't think there's a lot of people who think that way about New England.
They have made this thing very interesting on both sides. We'll be back in just a moment. Tom Brady and Drew Brees are the headliners. So why is someone else saying he's the best quarterback in the NFC South? And is he right? We'll answer both of those questions, and the answers will surprise you next. We are back on Get Up, and Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan was a guest on Pardon My Take recently, and when asked who was the best quarterback in the NFC South, Matt Ryan said currently, I'll go with myself. He also predicted 12 wins in 2020. Now, Ryan's stance is an interesting one. If you look at the current NFC South quarterbacks and their seasons last year, Ryan did actually have a really good QBR and completion percentage, but he did throw the most picks. Breeze led the quartet in all stats, including finishing first in the league in completion percentage. And obviously, you know, you have the two legendary quarterbacks in that division in Breeze and Brady. So, Booger, I'm going to come to you first on this one. When you hear Matt Ryan say, I'm the best quarterback in the NFC South, what do you say?
Well, I love the confidence, and I would kind of be appalled if he didn't have the confidence, but I don't think he's the best quarterback in the South. Now, he's got some really good weapons when you look at Ridley and Julio Jones, and I would feel really good. But the best quarterback in the South is Drew Brees. It's not Tom Brady. I'm not going to be partial to what's going on down here in Tampa. If you just look at what Drew Brees has done, the play caller that he has, the weapons that's surrounding him, the system that he plays in, how could you not go with Drew Brees as the best quarterback in the South? And they are loaded and ready to make another run. Matt Ryan is really, really good. Matt Ryan has kind of been underappreciated throughout his career, Greeny. He has an MVP. He's been to a Super Bowl. He was right on the cusp of winning that Super Bowl. But I think he's kind of like Matthew Stafford. He's been a little underappreciated based on what he's done and what he's accomplished. He's a very good quarterback. I would rank them. I would go Breeze, Brady, Ryan, Bridgewater as my four quarterbacks in the South.
How about you, Orlovsky?
I mean, if I took Matt Ryan and put him on Tampa Bay's team or New Orleans' team, he's the best quarterback in the NFC South. I mean, that's why I look at quarterbacks outside of a vacuum, and so that matters. Listen, he's got some weapons. Matt Ryan is an absolute stud. If you put him on those teams, he would be one of the three or four best quarterbacks in football with the talent that they have and the play callers that they have. I'd say this, for him to kind of back up that statement, they need that young offensive line to come along. They need Ridley to come along. Hayden Hurst needs to become the first round pick that the Baltimore Ravens thought he was going to be. Todd Gurley needs to stay healthy. Greeny, last year, 80% of their offense, 80% of their offense came from their pass game. I mean, the burden placed on Matt Ryan was so ridiculous. Last 2 years, he's got a defense that's in the bottom eight in the NFL. So there's been a ton of burden, to Booger's point, placed on his shoulders. But make no bones about it. And I've played golf with Matt Ryan. This is not a surprising statement. He's not just saying this because it's the correct thing to say. He 100% believes this, 100%. And so he's got that swagger and that moxie in his game. But if you told me Matt Ryan was going to go in Tampa Bay, he'd be on my MVP list. If you told me he's going to play New Orleans, he would be on my MVP list.
I'll ask the question that everyone else is wondering. What was the relevancy of you playing golf with Matt Ryan? Was you just wanted to say that out loud?
I mean, right?
Well, listen. I think context matters, and I've stood on a tee box.
In this case, it does not.
And I've pounded my driver.
Yeah.
And I've looked at Matt Ryan and go, "You ain't gonna beat that one, bud." And he just stood there with the 5-wood and airmailed my, you know, crop dusted my ball. So that's why I know he's got that inside of him. I just want to make sure people understand that.
Booger, help me here.
Leave it to Dan Orlovsky. He's trying to explain the humble brag, and he does it with another humble brag by talking about how he pounded his driver. He's falling right into the trap that Graziano set for him. Well, I'm just saying, you're falling into the trap because you are. It's all about Dan Orlovsky. To hell with Matt Ryan, this segment. It's about playing golf with me and me pounding my driver. That's what this segment is about.
I agree.
But you're mad you can't hit the ball farther.
For the purposes of this segment, the quarterbacks are in order. Orlovsky, then Ryan, Brady, Breeze, and Bridgewater. Dan Graziano,
thank you, Greeny.
I'm going to come back to you, I promise, on that. I have to get to the NBA here. I'm going to get your picks on this, I promise. But I think that was worth it. Because I feel in some ways, Graziano, that my going back at Dan that way was on your behalf. So in that way, I feel like the purposes were served. Quickly, let me get to the NBA here, because I got a bunch of news there. The Nets are going to be without, it would appear, Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. At least both of them announced they've tested positive for the coronavirus. Jordan will opt out of Orlando as a result, and Woj is reporting that Dinwiddie is strongly considering sitting out as well. And if you look at Jordan's opt-out, now means five Nets players will not be making the trip down there, including KD and Kyrie, who aren't going because of injury. This would actually be a very good team if you just put it together. And as the NBA continues to deal with players testing positive, Raptors guard Fred VanVleet had some interesting comments about playing in the bubble amidst the social justice issues in the U.S.
It sucks, man, and it's terrible timing, but that's been 2024. So I think, obviously we all know the right thing to do is to not play, to take a stand, to, you know, morally, yes, that makes sense. But life goes on. We're all young black guys, and none of us want to give any money back, and I don't think that we should. And I think that most of us decide to play, and it's something that we'll have to live with. But I trust that my heart's in the right place, and I'm doing enough to really make change.
All right, Malika Andrews is outside the bubble as we speak, preparing to go in and cover for us. And so prepare to see a lot of her in the coming weeks and months. And as this approaches, Malika, what more are you hearing from teams and players and their feelings about going into the bubble?
Yeah, Greeny, trepidation is a word that I think describes a lot of what the players I'm talking to are feeling right now, whether it's like Fred VanVleet said over racial and social justice issues, because even though the NBA is expected to put Black Lives Matter on the court, and even though they are allowing players to don the names of victims of police brutality or other social causes on the back of their jersey, players feel really strongly that their meaningful messages should also be followed up by tangible actions. And then, like you said, there's a whole other group of players who are feeling like they need to maybe take a beat and think about Orlando based off of health issues. The Nets are a case study in that, right? You, like you said, you have DeAndre Jordan, who's already opted out. You have Spencer Dinwiddie, who said, you know, I tested positive and now I have to really think about this. You have Wilson Chandler, who over the weekend told me, hey, you know what? My family, my grandmother, my children, I just can't leave them right now. And so you're going to see a lot of that as we march towards when players are supposed to arrive next week.
And you're sort of living a piece of it here. You were just telling me, I think it was fascinating to me. I'm sure the audience will be interested to hear. Quickly, run through sort of the way your day works, how you are being tested and all the rest of that as you prepare to go into the bubble at the end of the week.
Yeah, so I was safely transported from the Orlando airport to this hotel that is just outside where the bubble location is going to take place at Disney. And I basically came up to my room. I wiped my entire room down with Clorox wipes and with spray. A lot of NBA personnel are staying at this hotel right now in preparation for going into the bubble in a couple of days. And basically, Greeny, I only leave my hotel room to go and get food, which I bring back to eat in my hotel, and go to get tested. And even the bus drivers who take us in these huge charter-sized buses, and even though it was just me and one producer on the bus, to the site to get tested, even they are getting tested every day. And what it is it's one swab up one side of the nose, one swab up another side of the nose, one swab down your throat, and you get those results back within 12 hours. So it's going to be a very similar experience to what players will be going through when they get down here to Orlando.
And again, you will be going into the bubble covering for us starting towards the end of this weekend, and certainly we look forward to your coverage of this. It is a monumental undertaking that all these sports leagues are attempting here. You give them credit for trying. And all of us who are sports fans only hope that they can pull it off. Malika, thank you very much. You stay safe down there. We'll continue in just a moment. Coming up, who has more at stake in New England this year, Cam or Bill? I know the answer. Do my friends agree? We'll find out next. Get up on ESPN.